Welcome to Beeline, your 95 BFM news podcast, delivering straight up news.
Kia ora and welcome to this week's episode of Beeline, about Bird of the Year. Our yearly competition concerning the bird that will represent our nation is on right now, giving us an opportunity to show how much we care about our native wildlife. While many people may vote in Bird of the Year, not all of us are aware about its history, how the competition works, and how it benefits conservation efforts in Aotearoa. Before we get into it, however, Beeline does not endorse any of the birds discussed today. Make your pick wisely. First, I spoke to Senior Biodiversity Ranger in Auckland at the Department of Conservation, David Wilson. I started out by asking what kind of work DOC does, especially in an urban environment like Auckland.
So DOC, nationally, DOC administers around about a third of New Zealand's land area, but it's not so evident in Auckland where we have a lot of much smaller reserves. But there's still a bit of work to do managing those reserves. There's walking tracks and things that have to be maintained there. There are species and plants and animals and ecological communities there that we look after. We look after shorebirds, particularly the very endangered New Zealand fairy tern, Tarariri, Bird of the Year a few years back. Yeah, we look after threatened plants, we control weeds, we do public advocacy and awareness. We respond to whale strandings, conservation emergencies.
Yeah, and then thinking about things like awareness, you know, and building awareness around conservation, why is it important to build awareness around our birds?
Because our birds are in trouble. There's a lot less of them than there used to be. It's easy to look around Auckland and see there's a lot of tui and kereru and ruru. Yeah. So some birds are doing well. But if you go to Auckland's a good place to see what New Zealand birds might have been like in the past. You go to the offshore islands, Teritiri Matangi, places like that, and see the number and variety of native birds that used to be on the mainland in Auckland, where Auckland City is now. But yeah, very much reduced in numbers now, so a lot of work to do to bring some of those species back from the brink and get them part of people's lives again.
Yeah, and what does that work look like in practice? What sort of things is DOC doing to increase the populations of these birds?
So a lot of islands in the Hauraki Gulf are now predator-free, so they can be a haven for those bird species. There's a lot of work goes into keep the islands that way. A lot of ongoing biosecurity and surveillance for predators, and a lot of work to do when a predator does get ashore. And yeah, there is some work that has to be done on those islands, weed control, to keep them a good environment for those birds to live in.
And if we're thinking about now, like what people can do to support conservation efforts in Aotearoa and to help out, what sort of things can people be doing?
Well, the living world is very big, and so there's a lot of opportunities for people to get involved, depending on whether they're interested in growing native plants, particularly some of the threatened species, controlling weeds, adopting their local reserve predators. You can join your local trapping group, trap some predators. It might help shorebirds or other native birds in your area. Maybe it's as simple as just doing a better job of washing your recycling and doing something like that for the environment. But whatever time or interest you've got available to commit, there's always a way to get involved.
And then moving forward towards, you know, our goals of building a predator-free Aotearoa, increasing the populations of our native birds, what kinds of things would you like to see?
It's going to take a big coordinated effort to make large areas of New Zealand or even the whole of New Zealand predator-free in the future. So, coordinated trapping, predator control, toxin use as well, to try and, get predators down low enough over large enough areas that some of these bird species can make a comeback.
Yeah, and something like Bird of the Year, obviously not something that's administered by DOC, but I'm guessing you guys talk about it a little bit. Yep. You talk about, you know, the organisation's thoughts on that and your pick for Bird of the Year as well.
Well, as a good public servant, I'm politically neutral at election time, right, and this is no exception. Very hard to pick a favourite bird. I think of myself as a bird lover. I even like miners and spurwing plovers. I think I have a soft spot for the raptors, though, birds like the falcon, the kahu, the ruru. But the competition is great because it gets people talking, thinking about birds, thinking about what their favourite birds are. Maybe a person that's not so interested in birds hears other people talking about it, sees it on the news, starts to take a bit more notice, and that's the first step to caring about the birds and wanting to do something to help them.
Recently, Forest and Bird published a book on Bird of the Year and the history of the event. To discuss the contents of the book and how the event got its wings, I spoke to the author, Alan Rikers. I started out by asking what inspired the book's creation.
Well, the book actually came about because Penguin Random House, sort of in the aftermath of the 2023 competition where John Oliver had got involved and kind of blown things up, the publishers got in touch with Forest and Bird and said, we reckon that a Bird of the Year book would be really cool. And Forest and Bird said, well, the 20th anniversary of the competition is coming up, so that seems like a really good milestone to sort of look back on the history and all the fun anecdotes and how it's changed over the years. And so it just kind of grew from there.
And a lot of people, especially young people, might not be aware of the history of Bird of the Year. You mentioned, you know, 20-year anniversary. How and when did the event really start?
Yeah, so it started back in 2005 and fittingly started with a controversy when Radio New Zealand, they've been playing a bird call before the morning news every morning for like 50 years. And in 2005, the Morning Report hosts floated the idea that maybe they would get rid of this morning bird call, the daily bird call. And this prompted outrage among people who then sent in 1,600 texts over the space of an hour, sort of saying, no, you can't get rid of the bird call. And also kind of expressing a lot of love for particular birds that captured their attention. And Forest and Birds communications manager at the time, Michael Szabo, was listening to this, and he sort of thought, well, I've come across this concept of a Bird of the Year competition in Europe. Maybe we can capture all of this love that people clearly have for our native birds and channel it into a Bird of the Year competition, a bit of fun, raise some awareness for some of our native species. And so he decided to put it out in Forest and Birds' very first email newsletter in 2005, and it grew from there.
Yeah, and how has it grown over the years?
Well, massively. I mean, that first competition attracted, I think it was something like 865 votes, or around that 800 mark. And, you know, in recent years we've seen 50,000 votes or even 350,000 votes in the exceptional 2023 competition. So in terms of pure numbers, it's become pretty massive.
And you mentioned that the event sort of started out of that defence for the bird call on RNZ's Morning Report. Do you think that birds are very significant to New Zealand culture?
Totally. I mean, we call ourselves Kiwis. We've named ourselves after one of our native birds. And I think in a country that doesn't have big charismatic mammals, instead we're a land of birds, it makes sense that we have kind of latched onto them and found stories and interest and passion in our native birds. And I mean, some of them are so cool and weird and different, so it totally makes sense that they've become a part of New Zealand's culture and national identity.
And you mentioned one of the controversies around Bird of the Year in recent years. Could you go into that in a little bit more detail? I mean, a lot of people would have lived through it, but might not necessarily know exactly what happened.
Yeah, so it was 2023 and was Forest and Birds' 100th birthday, so decided to change it up a little bit and do Bird of the Century. But at the same time, we received an email from the producers at Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which is a US-based late-night TV, sort of satirical news TV show. And they were really keen to campaign for a bird, so anyone can get involved as an official campaign manager for their favourite bird. It doesn't matter whether they're in New Zealand or not. And so they were sent a list of available birds, and they said, oh, we'd love to campaign for the Pūtikitiki. And so then when about a week into the competition kicking off, John Oliver launched his campaign for the Pūtikitiki, the Australasian crested grebe, which was crazy, involved, you know, giant advertisements on the busiest intersection in Tokyo and on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, and just went nuts from that, sort of captured a whole US audience and international audience who then came and voted in Bird of the Century and propelled the Pūtikitiki, which was until then a fairly unknown bird, into the top spot.
And are there any other, I guess, controversies or interesting little bits you picked up about Bird of the Year as you were researching for this book?
Totally. I mean, there have been multiple voting scandals dating back to like 2010. And so there have been various efforts to try to stop those through voter verification, etc. There have even been rumours of Russian interference in the competition, which didn't really, that's kind of an urban myth, but it was quite fun at the time to be in the international news for Bird of the Year. And yeah, those voting scandals are definitely some of the biggest controversies. And then, of course, you have 2021 when a bat won Bird of the Year, which also was very controversial.
Lastly, I spoke to songwriter and Bird of the Year campaigner Claudia Robin Gunn. I started out by asking what she thought about the philosophy behind Bird of the Year.
Okay, my take on Bird of the Year is it's about bringing the need for, like, the serious need for conservation and awareness about our native birds to the spotlight for our public, but using fun, humour, creativity to really cut through and break through the weight of everything that's going on in the world, to just kind of remind everyone that we live in a beautiful place and every little bit that everyone can do can help, whether that's by backing their favourite bird or getting out and cleaning up a beach or setting a trap in their backyard. You know, everything really makes a difference.
And what's the bird that you're backing for Bird of the Year? And could you tell us a little bit about it?
Okay, amazing. This year, I and my sister Melissa Gunn are together backing the Tara Iti, New Zealand Fairy Tern. They are a really special bird. They are the rarest bird in Aotearoa. But they would much rather have the crown of Bird of the Year than rarest bird. So we really wanted to jump in behind all the efforts that other people are doing for this bird, such as the New Zealand Fairy Tern Charitable Trust, Auckland Zoo, Department of Conservation, look after these birds all year round and the communities. But they live up on these beaches in Mangawhai, Te Arai, Pakuri, and Waipu, and that's the only place they live in New Zealand, and they nest on the beach, and they're really vulnerable to predators. They're really vulnerable to even like climate events where the tides come in and wash away their eggs, and there's only 40 of them left. So they are tiny but mighty, and they really deserve everyone's votes.
And what goes into making a campaign for Bird of the Year happen? What goes into making your campaign happen?
Well, actually, funnily enough, this campaign has actually been about 4 years in the making. This is the first year Melissa and I have gotten behind the Tara Iti New Zealand Fairy Tern. But 4 years ago, we worked together to make a song to let people know a bit more about this bird for Endangered Species Day. And so we've come across them and taken photos of them and been aware of the work that all the conservation organisations do for them. So we've been learning about it for years, and this year was the year we decided, right, it's time to turn things around for the fairy tern. And our campaign is really just built around a song that we really want families and kids to listen to, because they can actually learn about some of the ways they can, what they can do out on the beaches and in their environments if they're in fairy tern habitat. And also we've just been having a lot of fun writing silly memes using tern puns to get people to really think about turning around and taking another look and doing things, everything they can to bring this bird back from the brink.
And are any of the other birds worrying you, the competition? It looks pretty fierce this year, as it does every year. What's sort of your main competition? How are you handling that?
Look, I mean, I think there's always a bit of friendly rivalry in this competition. You know, it's like shorebirds versus garden birds versus like mountain birds. And so there's this really interesting dynamic. And I think the main thing I would say is Tara Iti is an underbird. So I'm aware that we're not like much like the bird itself. There's only two of us. We don't have big corporate sponsors, but we are mighty. We have mighty big ideas. And, you know, I guess I'm looking at the Kiwi Puku Puku has a fantastic campaign going on. And to be honest, in my heart, I want all the birds to win, and all the birds will win if New Zealand gets behind this campaign. I just really hope they take some notice of this beautiful, amazing bird, the Tara Iti, and, you know, much like its real conservation status, I really hope they sort of keep a lookout and take another look around and help turn things around for fairy tern.
How do you think Bird of the Year, I guess, links to our culture in New Zealand around birds, and how do you think it links to your connection to New Zealand culture as well?
I honestly think it's a really strong link to New Zealand's sense of, like, Kiwis have got a great sense of humour, but we also, we love to see, like, underbirds come through. We fight for an egalitarian society here, and I think there's something, and we also really highly believe in democracy. So this is a vote where we get to sort of see the best side of New Zealand and Aotearoa, you know. We get to see how we can work together as a community, and I think that's what's beautiful, is it's not highly serious, and yet it's fiercely fought. And so in that sense, you know, I take my hat off to Forest and Bird for leading this initiative for so long, because I really think it exemplifies New Zealand's spirit in the world, on the world stage, about how we can care about our world and our native species, but kind of have fun as we go as well. Like, it is life and death for some of these birds, but you know what? Like, it's also, it's about our heart, and it's about the people that we're doing it with. So you can have fun, and you can also learn about facts, and you can do fantastic work for conservation.
That was Beeline. Thanks to all of our guests, Senior Biodiversity Ranger at DOC, David Wilson, author of the recently published Bird of the Year book, Alan Rikers, and songwriter and campaigner for the Taraiti, Claudia Robin Gunn. You can have your say on the Bird of the Year on the Forest and Bird website or through the link in the podcast description. Beeline will be back in 2 weeks to discuss the job market in Aotearoa. Ka kite!
Thanks for listening to Beeline, your 95 BFM news podcast, delivering straight up news.